Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Judy Markowitz with the Energized Realty Group in Flushing, New York. Last year, she closed 174 transactions with a total sales volume of $108 million. Her average sales price was $625,000, of which 47% were buyers and 53% were sellers. She operates a team with 14 members, 3 buyer specialists, 2 listing specialists, 1 team manager, 1 marketing manager, 1 prospecting assistant, 1 head administrative coordinator, 2 administrative assistants, 1 director of first impressions, 1 courier, and 1 team leader. Judy is the team leader of the Energized Realty Group. She's been an agent for 27 years and works the Northeast Borough of Queens in New York City. In this call, Judy talks about growing up in a housing project and starting work at 15 years old. Her turning point decision to stop paying the world and have the world pay her. Why she borrowed $1,000 to start her career and what she invested in. Mentoring with her first broker, doing whatever he said, and putting in overtime. How she gets 67% of her business by repeat and referrals from her small list of 560 past clients and sphere of influence. Her VVIP program, why she set it up, who gets in, and how she makes it work. Quiet leads, what are they, and how she benefits. Why she always wants her marketing to stand out from the crowd. Her annual ice cream social event that kicks off the summer has 3,000 people attend and gets big media coverage. Why she can take 3 months off each year. Team dynamics, compensation, profit margins, and more. Welcome to the call, Judy.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I'm great, Judy. Thank you so much for joining us. Judy, before we talk about what you're doing now, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
The truth is that I got into real estate when I was just about 23 years old. I feel like I'm one of the few people who got into real estate as their first career. I know a lot of people go after they've had other careers, but for me, it's pretty much what I've always done. I did have a short business life before, and what I did was I went to college for about 5 minutes, and unfortunately, I was one of those people who wasn't that prepared financially to go to the school of my choice, and it was really a big, major struggle, just like it is for kids today. And I also was what you might call a struggling actress, a struggling singer. And one day, right before I got my real estate license, and believe me, it hadn't even been on my mind, but one day I was really low on money and I was in Manhattan. I was probably going from either a dance class or an acting class, and I had to jump the turnstile because I had no money in my pocketbook. And at that moment in time, I decided that it was time for me to stop paying the world and for the world to start paying me. And I had been an exercise instructor in high school. I'm one of those kids. My parents are Holocaust survivors. So my mom handed me my working papers that said that I was 16 on my 15th birthday and told me, you're 16 now on paper, and I want you to go and get a part-time job. And I hope for your sake that it pays well because you're going to need it for your expensive taste. So I got a part-time job and I taught exercise, and I also counseled people, but it was a sales position, and enrolled them in weight loss programs and things like that. And I taught aerobics and signed people up at the health club and things like that. So I kind of knew that I had that ability to talk to people and to get to what I had learned was called an X factor. And when I jumped that turnstile, I said, you know, I just don't want to be doing this. I want a job where even without the education that I'm missing, that I can sort of not have that ceiling. I can just work really, really hard, learn what I need to learn, and go out and help people make decisions. And I had the ability. That was one thing. I guess it might be innate. You might call me an old soul, but I kind of knew how to talk to people and listen to people. And someone had told me that in real estate, it wasn't about houses. It was all about people and figuring out who's serious and who's not and what they really want. And not just what they want right in front of you, but what they want out of their life. And they told me I would make a great listing agent because if I could sell weight loss, which was just it's like selling air, then I could sell myself and be a listing agent. And really, the rest is history.
If I recall, you had even more drive. Did I understand correctly that you grew up in a housing project?
I did, yeah. My parents were Holocaust survivors. Unfortunately, my dad's gone. My mom is alive and well. But we grew up, I'm an only child, and I grew up in a place called Lefrak City, and it was a housing project, but in the early 60s, it was a very nice new housing project. And of course, as recent immigrants, my parents were very happy to go there. But as many people know, in the mid to late 60s, these newer housing projects very quickly became the image of a housing project that that most people think of when they hear those words. And, you know, my parents were very, very hardworking people. Unfortunately, because of the war and because of the tensions that were associated with it, my parents divorced when I was very young, but I continued to live with my mother in Lefrak City. And to be honest with you, when my friend had told me I'd be great in real estate, the first thing I told her was, are you kidding me? I have never even been in a house. Now, I didn't live in a we left Lefrak City when I was about 14 years old, but even when after I turned 14, I had really never spent any real time in a one or two family home. In my pre-listing package, it talks about how Judy is an apartment girl, and I didn't even know what a heating system was, and I did not know how oil or gas came into play with a house. So that was a pretty interesting transition to start selling properties, you know.
Sure.
But I have to say that those are the types of experiences that I think really helped me to gain some quick success in the business, because from the very, very beginning, I was willing to do what other people weren't because I really didn't know anything. So the mentor that I latched onto, my first broker, who I was with for almost 10 years, if he told me, you know, to walk the streets and knock on some of the houses that were in a less desirable part of Flushing, where I work now, because those houses were probably worth a lot more than your prettier houses because of the land value or the alternative use, I just did it. Whatever he told me to do, I did. And in my first 3 months of business, I had knocked on this old lady's house, and she hated realtors, but it was raining, and I was very young, and I didn't have an umbrella, and she felt sorry for me and invited me into her house, and 3 days later, I listed that property with the help of my broker, and it was a property that the entire market had been chasing because of its land value. And back in 1987, $880,000, which was the price point of that my first listing, my first written listing and sale, that was like $3 million today. And it was all because he sent me out to a neighborhood to knock on doors, and none of his other agents had been willing to do that.
It sounds like a lot of your success is probably coming down to the fact that you're willing to do things other people aren't.
I think that's a really big key to real estate success, is if you're willing to do the things that other people aren't, you're going to get the results that other people aren't. And in most cases, that's a much better result. You know, you really don't have to reinvent the wheel, but you do have to be completely committed to the basics of what all sales are, which is reaching out to a lot of people, getting a lot of people to get to know you, and make, you know, it's kind of like how many at-bats can you get, and how willing are you to make the phone calls and to talk to the people. And even to this day, even this week, I've told sellers, listen, I'm not an expert on gas conversion from oil to gas or on the specific components of a home. I will leave that to the experts. Obviously, I can advise them on things, but I tell them, I don't know nearly as much about houses as I know about people, but it's the knowledge about how people behave that's going to get me to get your home successfully sold. And it goes a long way, that willingness to let people know what you do really well, let them know what you don't necessarily do really well, but you'll make sure that they get the answers. And with all, you know, with all sincerity, to always be prospecting. And I think that might be one of the things that a lot of real estate agents just don't feel comfortable doing. And the thing about real estate that's amazing, and I tell everybody, is that it really doesn't matter what kind of prospecting you do. You could be sale by owners. You could be cold calling. I personally love cold calling. You could be calling expireds. You could be knocking on doors. You could call your sphere of influence. But you don't have to do anything you don't want to do, but you've got to do some of it. And whatever it is you are doing, you've got to do that a lot. And I think that's kind of a secret to the upbringing I had, and you know, watching my parents work really, really hard, and always wanting and always knowing that I wanted even more, you know. And so those are I'm willing to do anything within an ethical realm, and I'm willing to, you know, I'm willing to do those tough things. Even now, after 27 years, because of the goals that I have and the objectives I have for my family.
You said you started in 1987, and so that sounds like you've been in the business about 27 years. Does that sound right?
That is, yep. It's 27 years. Yeah, it's a long time. You know, the thing is that I'm 52, you know, and it's more than half my life. And I know that to some people, you know, some people would be listening and they'd say, well, you know, after 27 years, of course you're, you know what you're doing and all those things. But the truth is that, Well, you know, I'm not college educated. It's one of my only regrets in my life. I didn't have any business background, and I actually don't even consider myself a real estate agent. I consider myself a real estate agent and a business person, and, you know, I'm still doing the things that I was doing in my first year, two, and three. I'm still learning scripts and dialogues. I'm still tracking the number of phone calls that I make every day. Now, I may not make as many phone calls as I did in my first 10 or 15 years because I have a beautiful team that makes a lot of phone calls and I'm doing a lot of marketing and all of that. But I did all that then and I still do it now. I actually still even knock on doors when the weather permits me to do it because people, I think, really love to see people who are willing to work that hard to do business, especially when they perceive that that person is busy, but not too busy to go out and meet people. So those are the kinds of things I think you have to gain a passion for. And if you don't have passion for that, then have passion for calling expireds or having client events, things like that, you know. But you've got to do those kinds of things to really do well in real estate, I believe.
Judy, how many homes did you sell last year?
So last year, I closed 174 properties, and I closed a sales volume of 109 million. What's really interesting, though, Mike, because I know a lot of people, they have up years and down years and things like that. And, you know, my first broker, the wonderful man that was my mentor for almost 10 years, he always said, Judy, there are no good markets and there are no bad markets. There are just markets. So I have always believed in that. Why? Because I don't know any better, and it's really true. I don't have to look at the economy. I don't have to worry about how this is a bad year or a good year. If I just create goals every year that are higher than the goals the year before. And if I look at those goals, which I do, I carry them with me, I have them on my computer, and I have them in my day planner. If I carry those goals with me, more than likely, I will reach them. And so really, every year, we've improved the dollar volume and the number of transactions. And I'm not sure how that's possible, but it's always been true. And I think the reason it's possible is because I've committed to them in writing.
So you put together your plan and your goals. What time of the year do you do that? Do you do that in December of each year? Do you do it more than once a year?
I do that generally. I start in October, because that's the third quarter, the beginning of the third quarter, and I look at my business just the same way as I believe the big corporations look at their business, because I see that on TV. This, you know, the IBM checked their second quarter earnings were up, down, whatever. So I operate my business on a quarterly basis. And in the beginning of October, I look at the last 3 months. We always have an amazing December. And I want to tell a secret to the agents and brokers that are listening, that you can always have a great December if you remember that most agents are out either shopping or doing different kinds of things or partying, or they're worried about December because it's the holidays and it's slow. And I tell sellers and buyers, we always have a busy December because everybody else is sleeping and we're coming in and sweeping up. So, but for counting my goals, I actually don't even count December. I look at an 11-month year. And so I start in October, and I'm usually done with the goal setting by the end of November, and then I ask each one of my team members to share their goals in writing with me. I take those goals, I review them with each team member. Sometimes we modify them a little bit, either to make them more realistic or to step them up a little bit, to create measures for the members of the team that maybe think more conservatively. And I add though, I kind of mix those in to what I planned on for the overall group. And my personal goals, of course, are part of that overall group of that grouping of goals. And then they're usually solid by the middle of December when I share them with the team at the last meeting of the year. But the other thing, Mike, that I do that might be unique is that I set up business goals, and I also set up my personal goals. My personal goals for family, my goals for my personal well-being, my health, spirituality, dollar volume, of course, and sort of what I'm seeing in the next 5 years as well. But that's all done by the end of the year. And the only goal that I go back and revisit occasionally, and that I do with the team, is whether we are on track or not on a quarterly basis with our annual goals. So we talk about what percentage of our goals, our business goals, we're on track for very, very quickly. We don't do it, you know, we don't belabor it, but we go through that every month at one of our weekly meetings. So we always have our eye on the tiger.
Judy, let's back up for a minute and give everybody an idea of where you are. Where is Flushing, New York?
So Flushing, New York is a pretty urban area, especially by most people's imagination. It's a bedroom community of Manhattan, and many people that do know Flushing think of it as being the second largest Chinatown in New York and only the third largest Chinatown in the entire country. But the truth is that Flushing is actually much larger than the downtown Flushing area, which is made up really of an Eastern culture location, Chinese and Korean. In fact, part of Flushing is also a Koreatown, which I have heard, although I have not verified this, is the largest Korean population in the United States, and only the second largest to Korea in the world. But I have to say but there, because a lot of times and this is also another, like, let's say, business clue. A lot of times you'll hear me say something and something else, and that's by design in terms of what I call empowering language, because if you say but, you're almost minimizing what you said before you said the but. So you'll hear me do that a lot. But in this case, and I advise people to do that with buyers and sellers as well, you know, the yard is really very sweet. It's not necessarily as big as the other one, and it's easier to manage. Instead of but, it's easier to manage. And I just wanted to stick that in. But in this case, I will use but. But Flushing is not just Chinatown and a huge Korean population. It's also a very nice area that has subways nearby and also that go right to the city in 15 or 20 minutes. By the city, I mean Manhattan, and also has a fantastic bus and railroad service, so that a lot of urban professionals live in the Flushing Bayside Whitestone area, which I serve. The schools are considered excellent. The population is huge. I mean, when I do a mass mailing, I am mailing out to over 30,000 households, and there's many, many, many more households than that. I would say that the population here overall is of the Flushing Bayside Whitestone area is somewhere near 400,000. So we're talking about a really big area. The one thing I will say is that the neighborhoods all have their own flavor. It's very culturally diverse, and it's great for real estate because it really gives me the opportunity to work with a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life.
Can you describe for us what type of real estate is there that you're selling? Are you typically selling a single family house? Is it a really dense urban area so that you're more selling apartments and condos and co-ops? What type of property are you selling?
The majority of the homes that I sell are one and two family properties. And what they basically look and feel like is it could be an attached home. In other parts of the country, this might be called a townhome, but in our area, it's called an attached or a semi-detached home, which would mean that it's an attached home on a 20 to 25 by 100 lot size, sometimes smaller. I'm selling a house right now on a 16 by 80 lot size, and believe it or not, it has a little backyard, it has two or three bedrooms, it has a living room, dining room, eat-in kitchen, a finished basement. It just happens to be attached on both sides. Or if it's a detached house, it would normally be on anywhere between a 25 by 100 to a 60 by 100 lot, with many typical detached homes in the $700,000 to $800,000 range on what you call a 40 by 100 lot, which is a very typical lot size in my area. I really work with a lot of one and two family homeowners. In fact, people call me and they say, Judy, you know, you've been doing this so long, everybody knows you. Why don't you sell commercial real estate? It's so lucrative. And, you know, and I feel that I tell them, I am your basic one and two family realtor. I love working with the people. My team that works with me, we pride ourselves on being what I call residential specialists. Now, we do sell co-op apartments, which is kind of like an anomaly around the country. I know there's not that many co-ops. A co-op is an apartment, but instead of renting it, the buyer buys it and owns shares in the corporation, which is the building or the development. And those co-ops, what's unique about them is that you don't own real estate property, you own shares in a corporation, and you pay maintenance on top of your mortgage for the apartment. There are also a lot of condominiums in downtown Flushing, in the area that is most dense in our area. However, I don't really handle those unless they're by referral because it's a very different type of market. There's a tremendous amount of buyers for the condo market in downtown Flushing that are coming in from other parts of the world and purchasing. And I really love the visibility of selling one, two, and three family homes. I do sell some condos every year by recommendation, but the majority of my work is just being a residential specialist like there are so many across the country. And what's really interesting is a lot of the people that I work around here, we do a lot of really unique marketing. We have lights on our houses that light up at night. I have a moving truck. I do an ice cream event every year. I've been doing that for about 16 years now, and we have over 3,000 people come. It's all down-home stuff that a lot of agents say, oh, that wouldn't work in my area because my area is more sophisticated, or my area is more like a city, or my area is more of a bedroom community. We are all of those things, and many, many of the things that people can do in small towns work just as perfectly in larger locations because people miss that personal touch. And so I've just looked at ourselves as residential realtors, and we serve the community, and that's what I really love to do.
Notice that you have this, what seems to most of the people in the U.S. is a high average price, this $629,000. Is that a typical one or two family home in your area, or did you push yourself into some type of luxury home to achieve that higher average price?
I think I can answer this question best by going back to what kind of realtor I see myself as. And for me, it's not, when I'm serving the public, it's not about the price of their home. When I'm creating a plan for my income and for our production, one of the ways that I'm focusing on price point is that if you work a higher price point, the commission is just better. X percent of a higher number is higher than X percent of a lower number. If you find homeowners that own multiple properties, then you don't have to necessarily prospect as many new people. But I would say that part of the reason that number is high is because I don't specialize in co-ops and condos. I do sell co-ops and condos, but only by recommendation. And if someone really wants me, I will work for them. And because I know that they want me, and if I can create a raving fan out, they'll refer me to other people who might have higher price points. I would say to you that it's not as much a function of the market, although house prices in our area, I think right now the average house price in our area is somewhere between. And, you know, I don't, to tell you the truth, I don't worry so much about what MLS is doing or what the averages are. I just focus, I guess that's the thing. I'm pretty intense, so I just focus on what we're doing. I would say the average price range for right now, if you combine co-ops, condos, and houses, is somewhere around $500,000, somewhere maybe between $500,000 and $550,000 from what I can see. I just have a higher price point because I really focus on selling one and two family homes. And for example, that attached house on the 16 by 80 lot size without a garage, without a driveway, with just a backyard is going in the 490s. A detached house on a 40 by 100 lot, more often than not, will never go under the 660s and could go as high as 800. Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure. Very good. So that gives us a good picture of where you are in your market. What are the different ways that you're generating the leads for your business?
Okay. So what I really believe is that the things that we do can work anywhere. As long as there's a neighborhood, you can do anything that we've been doing, because we're in such a culturally diverse area where so many people don't even speak English, and yet all of it works. And I only do marketing and promotion, quite honestly, in English. I have Asian buyer specialists that do some advertising of specific homes in language-specific papers, but other than that, everything is in English, and it still works. So one of the most important ways that I generate business for the Energized Realty Group is through actively prospecting and creating relationships with past clients and customers and our sphere of influence. And what I mean by actively prospecting is that I get a lot of repeat and referral business. I know I sent you those numbers. I don't have those right in front of me right now, but you've got those numbers. And I'm calling those people regularly. I am calling to see how are you doing and what's going on. And I generally know how many children they have because I have a VVIP program. And I ask people, we send surveys out when a seller is listed with me or a buyer is buying with us. I send them current listing surveys or current buyer surveys, and then we send them closing surveys, and we include a VVIP form, and we get a very high return on those VVIP forms because we start talking about wanting to create raving fans and that our goal is to make you a VVIP. Very early in the process, we explain to people what a VVIP is, that they're people that are very special to us, people that refer business to us, people that have done more than one unit of business with us, and because of that, we treat them the way they want to be treated, and at the end, we're going to ask you to fill out a VVIP form. We want to know your birthday. We want to know what your favorite beverage is. We want to know when your anniversary is, and they'll get something from me for their wedding anniversary. They'll also get something from me for their house anniversary, and each seller and buyer become a VVIP. I call it in-house, I call it that they're a VVIP on probation for a year. And if during that year I can turn them into a VVIP, which means either that they have referred business to me and done business with me, that's two, or sometimes I'll meet people who never have done business with me, but we've been talking about real estate, or they've come up to me at the ice cream event. We've talked a little bit. I've gotten their name and address. I put them into the VVIP database, and they're on VVIP probation for a year, too. But, of course, I don't have their anniversaries yet, things like that. And then I call them, and if they refer business to me but have never done business with me, they become a VVIP. Or if they do business with me more than once, then they are a VVIP. But all buyers and sellers become a VVIP for the first year, and that's when I continue that cultivation, asking for referrals, calling them for their wedding anniversary. A lot of times I'll call the husband for the wedding anniversary 5 to 7 days before their anniversary just to wish them a happy upcoming anniversary because sometimes the husband forgets the anniversary, you know. So I'm the one that's reminding them of that. And so that creates the relationship. And through that, I don't know exactly what it is, but I think we've done about 40% of our business in repeat and referral business. But my mentor, who trained me for my first 9.5 years, always told me, Judy, if you're only doing referral business, you're not doing enough business. I do a lot of business through my signs. And the reason for that is from a very early time in my career, I always wanted to zig when other people were zagging. So what does that mean? It means that I wanted my signs to look different. I was the first person in my market to put a picture on my sign. And then after I put the picture on my sign, and now we have these really beautiful signs, they're bigger than all the other signs because, you know, I'm not shy. I think in real estate, you can be a person who is more subdued, because I don't think anyone would call me subdued, but you can be very successful, but you have to do, it all goes back to what we talked about before, you have to be willing to do what other people are not willing to do. Now I have lights at night on my signs. We use sold riders that are different. My sold riders say, sold, Judy did it again, or I'm sold on Judy, sold in less than 30 days, you know? And so the public sees these and people call. We get a lot of sign calls from prospective buyers. We get so many calls that we could never have enough inventory for the amount of calls that we get. But then we have systems to continue staying in touch with those people. And I get a lot of seller calls from the signs. And I would urge anybody, unless your town prohibits it, make your sign just a little bigger. Don't be a secret agent. Put your picture on the sign. It really is all about you when it comes time for someone to buy or sell a home. They need to feel like they know you, even if they don't know you. And some people won't like you. Some people don't like me. But that's okay, because most people love me. And the people that don't like me or feel that I'm too out there or whatever the case may be, that's more about them. And in fact, they're doing me a favor, because it's just that much easier to find the people who do like you or who do feel that they might like to do business with you. So the signs are another way. We're very, very in touch with our internet presence. We make sure that our pictures are up to date, that there's no glitches. I have an in-house marketing manager that really takes care of that. But I want to step back a little bit, because when people are listening to tapes like this, I think they want to know, okay, that's how you do it now, but how did you do it then? When I did it then, which was a long time ago, you know, within a month of when I went into real estate, I borrowed $1,000. I was jumping turnstiles. I didn't have a pot to put my food in, if you know what I'm talking about, at one point. And I borrowed $1,000 to go to an educational seminar. And I decided that I was going to learn every single script. I was going to be the one that stood up on stage and did the script in front of the 500 people, not because I wanted to be a star out in Scottsdale, Arizona, within 1 month, but because I wanted to go back and list property. I wanted to go back and have clients, and I didn't have the experience to do that. I had to get the education, and I had to have the enthusiasm and the energy, and that's how I became the Energized Realtor and the Energized Realty Group. And the truth is, anyone can do those things. In 1995, when the internet was hardly something we were talking about, I spent $700. It was a lot of money. I think it might have even been more, to just get a little one-page website. Nobody had one, but I knew that if I was going to be in it for the long run, I better be the first. And now we have a beautiful website, and we're developing a Chinese website for the Asian market, because we know that that will be the first to do that in the right way, because a lot of people do these different language websites, but they're really just translations. And believe me, the Asian market laughs at those websites because they're just incorrect. They're not English, nor are they Chinese. So we're working on that. It's taken us time, but we will be the first to do that. And you have to have, it all goes back to guts. No guts, no glory. You can't just keep saying, you know, I don't have the money for that, or that's not my style. I don't like to learn scripts and dialogues. Those are the things that help you have a consistent track record in the market. And then when you have a consistent track record in the market, that's when people don't doubt you so much. That's when they're more inclined to pay you a better fee for service. That's when they know that you have the credibility and that that listing interview is a two-way street. I'm interviewing them and they're interviewing me. But to be honest with you, from the very beginning, I had a mindset that I would fake it until I made it. So I would go in and I would say, even when I was just 1 year in the business, I would say, if we decide to work with each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was never, if you give me the listing. It was always to create an even playing ground, even though I actually had nothing to offer except energy and enthusiasm. I always wanted people to perceive me in a way that would show value to them. And these are all the scripts and dialogues that I still use today.
But Judy, you mentioned that the majority of your business is coming from the past clients and sphere of influence. Let's talk about that, dig into that a little bit more. How big is your database of past clients and sphere of influence?
My database of past clients and, let's say, past clients, customers, and VVIPs, because they don't necessarily have to have been buyers or sellers to become a VVIP, you know what I'm saying, is somewhere in the vicinity of 560 people. But you have to remember that that's over the course of many, many years. I had 60 VVIPs after about 5 years. I didn't call them VVIPs yet because I didn't yet have the system, but I was always courting people for referrals. I never believed, and I still don't believe, that people just have you in their mind all the time and they're just compelled to talk about you at the dinner table. I just feel like people are just too busy for that, to just have one good experience with you and then sing your praises forever. So I always was calling people after they bought or sold with me. I always sent thank you notes to the attorneys and asked them if they would keep the good service that I gave in mind if they had clients that they could refer to me. I always was willing to do a market appraisal for an attorney, even if the people weren't going to sell or even if the people weren't going to use me. I always felt like if I was willing to do those things, that eventually the reciprocity would kick in. I send 5 to 8 thank you notes every day. There's always people to thank for something. And a lot of times it's about those little things that impress people and keep you in their mind. So that's a great way to do your business from the very beginning. I have a guy that called me 2 days ago. He works for sanitation, and he had met me somewhere, like maybe he met me on the street with sanitation, and we were talking and chatting, and he said he saw my signs, and I said, that's so great, and they're doing such a great job. And he called me, and he gave me what I call a quiet lead. He told me who he recommended, and he told me that he can't give me their number, but that they were going to call me. And then in a period of time, they did call me. I had his number, and I called him, and I told him that they hired me, and I appreciated him so much. And he called me the other day, and he told me about other people that he's actually recommended me to. It's not just a quiet lead. It's a referral. I work with a lot of mailmen who have become my VVIPs. I have 3 or 4 mailmen. I'm just really, you know what? The bottom line is, if you're good to people, they're going to be good to you. And I chat with them and I speak with them. And sometimes I take pizza to them at the mail house or give a gift to somebody if they've been really nice to me, or I'll send them to the movies. And those are things I really believe that those are things that make people think that you're amazing. and then they recommend you, you know. So it's over 550, but it could start very, very small. It could start, my ice cream event the first year was only about 100 people. and I didn't get any business from it right after that. Now, my summer depends on the success of that ice cream event, but it's a matter of being willing to do things to make people see that you're not just after the next deal, but that you really are serving people and that you care about them.
Judy, you've mentioned the VVIP multiple times, and help us out. What do those letters mean? VIP is a very important person. What's the extra V at the beginning?
So V is very, very important person.
Okay. Very good.
So that's very, very important person. And we have an in-house mission statement. And these are all things that add to team building too, and or to any business building. So we have an in-house mission statement that says, work hard, have fun, make money, do good. So our VVIPs are the ones that we believe have really felt that mission. That's our internal mission statement. Our external mission statement, you know, is that our mission is to listen and respond to every client and customer's needs in a highly energized manner to exceed their expectations. Simply put, we don't have satisfied customers, we create raving fans. And raving fans are who our VVIPs are. And those are the people that I work very hard along with the rest of my group to learn what they like, to find out when their birthdays are, to make sure that we know if they have small children, when their children's birthdays are, to make sure that they're invited to, everyone in the community is invited to the ice cream event, but they get a special invitation to the ice cream event. They get a phone call as well telling them that we really would love to see them. We hope they'll come. They're the ones that are invited if I have a VVIP party. Now, I haven't had a VVIP party recently, but I do a VVIP pie event every year. And that's a small thing because years ago when I was a single agent, I went out and I bought 60 Jelly Belly jars and I ran out to people's houses and delivered the Jelly Belly jars. Now we do, that was for Valentine's Day. Now we don't do that. Now we do a pie giveaway, but it's only for VVIPs. So they're invited to that. You know, if I know that their favorite drink is a Starbucks, you know, then if they send me a referral or if they write a thank you letter after the closing or they put something up on Zillow, which is another way that we really capitalize on our internet marketing, I'll send them 2 Starbucks certificates and I'll write in the note, I want you to have your favorite coffee on me. They'll get a birthday card with the whole team's picture on it holding a birthday cake and they'll get a coupon to go to Carvel and pick up one of those mini birthday cakes. And they might get a phone call from me on their birthday. I'll leave a message on their machine if they're not home. But you can feel when people welcome you. And that's what you want to do. You want to create raving fans so that when you call them, they welcome you. And those are people that sometimes I say to them, listen, you guys, I have so many great people who want to buy a home, but I need more property, and I really, really need you to spread good rumors about me and see if you can recommend me to somebody. And by the way, if you do recommend me to somebody, give me a call and let me know who they are. And if it's appropriate, I'll call them, and you can tell them it's better if Judy calls you because she'll introduce herself. She will give you all the information you need. She is not going to want you to list your house or do anything like that. She's just calling you to discuss your real estate situation, and that goes a long way. Sometimes I do end up calling the people that are recommended. Sometimes they call me and they say, Judy, you know, don't tell them that I said, but these people, I think they're thinking you might just want to give them a call. You know, and that's a raving fan too, somebody that's willing to help you build your business.
I really like how you help your raving fans with sending you a referral by giving them an outline of what you expect and how the process works. You give them a framework to work within to help you, and of course to help them as well, because they'll feel good giving a referral that works out.
And the other thing is that if they do send me a referral or a quiet lead, as I mentioned earlier, I will always call them and send them a thank you with a little small something after I make contact. It's not when I get the job. I would do that as well, but I will always let them know what happened if and when I meet the buyer or seller, or if and when I make contact. So it keeps them involved, you know. It's kind of like Microsoft. Microsoft, when they first started, I read a book about this, so I'll just synopsize it. When they first started, they asked their viewership to go in and tell them what they liked about it and what they didn't like. And when they changed it, they let those people know that they reviewed it because of those suggestions that were made, and that created an affinity between the people that were starting to use Microsoft and Bill Gates, you know what I'm saying? And that's how he built his business, by getting people to feel like they had a piece of it. It was a part of them. So the VVIPs who recommend me or who tip me off, I ask them to call me back and let me know who they talk to me about. If it's possible, they'll give me their number or they'll give me their address. I have a lot of like great letters that I've created over the years that address different situations. If they don't want me to disclose that it was them, I don't. And if they do want me to, then I will. But in every case, I will get back to the person and let them know, listen, I met with Mr. Bradley and we had a really good talk, and it looks like he's going to hire me, and I just love you for letting me know what was going on over there, you know? And so those are the things that really help, is creating relationships. What can I say?
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.